MKUltra. I was the lead psychiatrist.
No matter how deep you dig, the only thing you'll find is more lies.
Barry!
I'm not the monster in the closet with the electrodes and the drills.
Oh my God.
That's a clip from a rather amazing new movie. Actually, it's been out a couple of years, titled Altered Minds, that gives a human side to the story of MKUltra. That is, the horrible mind control and psychedelic and brainwashing experiments that were done on behalf of us Americans and Canadians too, by our deep state friends who were looking to protect us. But the reason that I play that clip, and the reason why it's particularly relevant to today's wide-ranging show on Andrea Puharich, is that our history, the history of parapsychology, the history of the deep state, the history of mind control, the history of the paranormal, is always a lot more complicated than it seems. And that's because there are these amazing people like Andrea Puharich who are at the center of these stories.
We have footage of this. I mean, he was there with a rather small team. I think a guy with the video camera and maybe two other people, a translator. And, you know, it's just incredible that just to think about, you know, in the early 50s, here's this guy, you know, romping through the jungle, finding these mushrooms. And what he did was he would bring them back to his laboratory in Maine, the Round Table Foundation, and he would do all sorts of ESP experiments. So, you know, he would test somebody when they were not on mushrooms, and then he would test somebody when they were, you know, dosed on mushrooms. And like you said, his theory was that when you're on these things, it enhances your ability, it enhances your extrasensory perception ability. And, you know, personally, I think there was some really interesting results. I mean, this is in the Sacred Mushroom book, if you read it, and it's a little bit in his book, Beyond Telepathy, which came out around the same time. It's very convincing results. Of course, you know, people have all their different opinions on this kind of stuff. But
Well, let me jump in there, because part of the reason that people have a lot of different opinions is because of the way the whole psychedelic thing plays out, right? I mean, so you've already set it up that he has these folks that he's talking to, army connections, what we'd call deep state connections to, intelligence connections. But again, as you said before, you know, we've got to put this in context. And I would add, we have to put it in a historical context. Mm-hmm. This is right after World War II. You know, we don't know what's up. We know we've dodged a major bullet in terms of controlling the whole world with fascism. And, you know, so the CIA, the newly minted CIA, is kind of got a blank check to go and do whatever they have to kind of keep us safe kind of thing. You got to imagine.
Exactly.
And we find out later that one of the things that they got interested in really early on was, how do we control people? What if we could control people? And they can always spin it around and say, hey, we're trying to protect you. We don't want other people controlling you. So if someone's going to control you, we better be able to know what it is. So I just put that out there because it's easy to take. I don't want to give Puharich a kind of free pass here by any means. But what interests me is what you just said. This guy doesn't seem to be interested in, at least at this point, he's not looking for the mind control aspect of it. It doesn't seem like he's all that interested in, although I want you to kind of correct me or expound on this, you know, where he is on the spiritual aspect of it and extending beyond these consciousness realms. But his focus, what I found interesting, he's like, darn, let's see how, you know, he's like the doctor scientist. Let's do experiments with this. Does this relate to telepathy? If you take the mushrooms, can you read my mind and I read your mind? And, you know, what is that technology from a biological, medical perspective? Is there something going on in the brain that's, you know, doing this? He wants to know. He's a curious guy. So could you pull that apart for us? You know, both how deep state he is at this point, number one, and then number two, Is he looking at it from the spiritual standpoint, from the extended consciousness standpoint? You said he was talking to the big kahunas in Hawaii. Obviously, when you talk to those people, the shamanic people are saying, hey, dude, you can go play around with that stuff, but it ain't about that. Is he that, or is he coming at it from this kind of Western thing where he says, well, you just don't know, you know, you don't know, old man. You know, what it's really about is getting control of it so we can turn it into another medicine. I put a lot on the table there, but.
Oh, it's okay. Yeah, it's interesting. In terms of the deep state, I mean, at that time, there's documentation of this. Once again, it gets murky with his involvement in some of these things in terms of actual proof of what he did, where he was, who he was associated with. There's a few things that show this, but he, at that time, was actually doing sort of a lecture tour, and he was presenting papers about the possible uses of ESP in warfare. And he was giving these lectures at places like the Pentagon, you know, Army Intelligence, all these sorts of places. And like you said, at that time, they were sort of buying into this stuff. They thought that this could be helpful. And he was the guy to go to for this. So his name started to circulate around these sort of deep state areas. And, you know, it's interesting what you say, because he... You know, I think at first he was doing a lot of research because, you know, that was his job. You know, he was being contracted to do this research with LSD and with mushrooms. But I think, you know, his spiritual sort of side really came in around that time. We're talking mid-50s, early 60s, where I think he started to sort of see what the Army's plan was, to what their plan to do with these substances were, control people, I don't know, this really dark stuff. And I think for whatever reason, you know, he was sort of horrified, I think, when he realized what they were really going to do with this stuff.
So our guest today is an independent filmmaker, Greg Malazzi, who has taken it upon himself to tackle this huge and hugely important film project documenting the life of Andrea Puharich. This interview is wide-ranging because the life of Puharich is extremely wide-ranging. At the end of this, we're going to ask you to help this filmmaker. I'm trying to help him. I think we all need to try and help him pitch in a little dough so he can get this film made. So give a listen. See if you think this is a worthy project to support. And of course, stay with me for Skeptico. Today we welcome Greg Malazzi to Skeptico. Greg is a filmmaker and is creating a rather amazing film about someone you may or may not have heard about before, Andrea Puharich. The name of the film is Mind Over Matter. As you can see, the mysteries of Andrea Puharich. And Greg, welcome to Skeptico. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Alex. It's a big fan of the show, so it's really cool to be on here. I appreciate it.
Well, it's awesome to have you on. You know, you reached out to me because you are doing this film project. And as it would kind of happen, I run across Puharich over and over again in the last 6 months, because if you're interested in parapsychology, you're going to run across this guy. But then if you're interested in all this other stuff like psychedelics and the whole beginning of that, you're going to run across him. Heck, if you're interested in UFOs, you might run across him. If you're interested in this amazing seance that he did with the Nine, you're going to run across him. And Peter Lavenda and even UFOs. So he's really kind of this central figure that I think so many people haven't heard about. Tell us, you have a really unique, I guess, access to his work. Tell us a little bit about yourself as a filmmaker, and then let's jump into talking about this project.
Yeah, sure. I've worked in documentaries for a number of years, mostly in New York City. And I worked on various projects, but like you said, you know, the psychedelics, parapsychology, UFOs, I mean, that's always something I'd been very interested in ever since I was a young kid. And, you know, I came across Puharich, you know, probably like many other people, like you said, his name sort of popped up a lot in various things. And I became quite interested in him. I want to say maybe 5 to 6 years ago, perhaps even 7 years ago. You know, his name would continuously pop up all the time in these articles I would read, these books I would read. And, you know, I always had his name sort of floating around in the back of my head. And after all these years, you know, after all this stuff I had read, I had bought a couple of his books, I think particularly a book called Beyond Telepathy. That he wrote, and I was just so intrigued by this guy. And you know, from a documentary filmmaker's point of view, and from a storyteller's point of view, I just sort of thought, how hasn't anybody, you know, made a film about this guy? So I sort of Googled him and did more research on that, and it became pretty clear that, you know, in fact, nobody had done anything on him. There's some videos online, some photographs, but there had never been a major sort of film project on him. So then
fast forward just a little bit, because one of the things that intrigued me when you first contacted me, you were like, hey, Alex, I got access to all of his papers, basically. I don't know. Tell us about that, because that seems kind of extraordinary too. Mm.
Yeah, what happened was Andrea has a handful of kids. And so what happened was I had reached out to his son named Andy, actually Andrea Jr. Puharich, and who maintains a website about his father. So it's just a basic website. It has photographs. It has information about Andrea. I think it's maybe the first thing that'll pop up if you do a Google search on Puharich. And so I had found that website, and sure enough, there was a contact there for his son Andy. So I was a little hesitant, but you know, I ended up reaching out to Andy and just being very honest with him. I told him I wanted to do this film. I told him, you know, how fascinated I was in his father and his life, and that started this communication where Andy and I just started emailing one another for about a year, actually, and then we started to do Skype calls. And what he told me, which I found quite interesting, was that his father died in 1995, and he told me ever since 95, filmmakers, journalists, authors have all been reaching out to him to this very day, have been reaching out to him about doing something on his dad. I mean, he had told me that, you know, these sort of big wig Hollywood producer types have reached out to him about doing something on his father. And, you know, he was very protective in a way, you know, as he should be. It's his father. He was very close with him. And I didn't think he was ready to sort of hand this story over to just anybody. And I think it took a while for him and I to become close. And we finally met in person after a year or so of communicating online. And we just hit it off, and we became good friends. And basically, Andy had kept all of his father's archives. We were talking stuff that's going back to the late 1940s. And, you know, he had kept this material basically, you know, I always think of it, it's almost like a documentary filmmaker's dream scenario. It's just all this stuff sitting in a basement, and Andy had it. And one day, you know, he said, look, I've got all this stuff on my dad. And he sort of said, you know, I don't know if you even want to look at it. It's so old, it might not be relevant. And I just said, I would love to see this stuff. So sure enough, you know, he started sending me these materials, and it was just pretty mind-blowing. It's, you know, we're talking, like I said, stuff going back to the late 40s, pretty much everything Andre had written, personal journals. I mean, it was very, very exciting. It was mind-blowing. So
I can imagine. I mean, I think we have to stop and have you again do a sketch of this character, because I did a quick one at the beginning, but people aren't going to fully appreciate just what a I don't know if you can say a big deal this is, but if you're interested in this history at all, our history, I mean, not just parapsychology history, this is like central to history of the 20th century, you know. This guy's name does pop up again and again. What I thought you might do for people who aren't watching this video but are just listening, maybe read the very excellent, I don't know what you want to call it, you know, teaser piece you've written up for the website about the film. And again, folks, stay tuned. We're going to have a link in the show notes, but Greg is done a tremendous amount of work on this film, but he's going to need some help. He's got a Kickstarter campaign going on. I'm on board with it. No question. I'm going to chip in what I can, but we got to get this film made because it's really an important piece of film. Greg, read for people the kind of summary here, the abstract for the Mind Over Matter film so people can get an idea of what you're doing.
Yeah, sure. So the little pitch here, it's once a top name in both science and medicine, Dr. Andrea Puharich put his career and reputation on the line to research the unknown, becoming one of the most controversial figures in modern science. Being considered too far out or too ahead of his time, Puharich's work delved into psychedelic healing, psychic phenomena, consciousness, and the reaches of the human mind. This is a never-been-told story of a man whose research and theories have both baffled and inspired people around the world, including his colleagues, his family, and even top intelligence agencies. What did he really know?
Great. So intriguing. So where do we want to start in this story? Maybe let's just do the basic bio, which you kind of gave, but this guy is a top scientist and he's interested in parapsychology kind of stuff before it was even called parapsychology. So where would you start in telling people who this guy is and putting him in context, especially given that the way it's going to play out, this guy is going to become associated with the whole magic mushroom psychedelic thing before Wasson. I mean, just very early on, some people say he's the guy who kind of first got the deep state, even gave him a heads up that this mind altering, consciousness altering thing was even something they should look at. So we have that. And then he goes into this rarely, really strange seance thing that we're going to talk about with these interplanetary beings that lead him for 20 years on this very scientific investigation of what might be going on these other realms and how they might be trying to guide the thing. And then to throw something else in that everyone can relate to, turn back to, you know, here and now and parapsychology and that kind of stuff. And Uri Geller. So here is the guy who introduces Uri Geller to the United States, brings him to SRI, Stanford Research Institute. So all the research that you see, Hal Puthoff, Russell Targ, Uri Geller, here's the guy again in the middle of it who introduced him. So tell us a little bit more about the basic background, where he was born, where he was educated, you know, who he was before he started this crazy life.
Yeah. I think a lot of people don't know much about his early life, which to me is just as interesting as anything else. But he's from Croatia. He was a Croatian immigrant from his parents, and so he grew up in Chicago, and you know, sort of a normal upbringing, middle class, really good student. So I've learned from these archives, but you know, he had an interest in the mind at a very early age. So he tells a story about how when he was a young kid, he was delivering milk. It was a side job that he had to earn some money. And he was delivering to this certain house with a rather aggressive dog. And the dog was, very angry that he had shown up. And the dog was just about to attack him. And allegedly, Puharich, got calm in a calm state of mind, and he sent this mental message to this dog and said, you know, calm down, don't attack me. And according to him, this dog settled right down. And, you know, that's the story of how he got interested in this stuff. And this was very early. We're talking maybe 18, 19 years old. And so he went on to go to Northwestern University, which is in Chicago. And that sort of started his career as a medical doctor. Once again, a lot of people don't know he, you know, he had a medical degree, and he went to Northwestern. He did a residency at the Permanente Institute in Oakland after he graduated. And around this time, he began to get more and more interested in the brain. He had all these different theories about, you know, how the mind works, but very far out, of course, for that time. We're talking, you know, early.
Hey, 50s. Greg, can I interject a question here? Because there's some pretty spooky people at Northwestern around this time. So we're going to talk later about the MK Ultra stuff, and that, which is totally real. I mean, people have to understand we're not talking about wacky conspiracy stuff. We're talking about stuff that's been outed and we know happened. Mm-hmm. Do you have any information yet at this point about whether or not he made contact at Northwestern with some of those folks who we know were from Northwestern that wind up showing up in the MK Ultra program?
I think it's very likely. I mean, I'm sure we'll get into this later, but I mean, as you know, I mean, when you get into the MK Ultra stuff, especially when it comes to Buharich's involvement, it gets very murky very quickly. And there's some evidence, I think, leading towards a very early introduction to some of those people at Northwestern. But to be 100% honest, I don't know enough to make any definitive statements about that. But
let me pursue that a little bit further, because the other thing I wanted to throw in there kind of early on, and I hope this doesn't throw people for too much of a loop or is too much inside baseball, but so be it. How are you going to have real discussions if you don't? But it seems to me that Puharich is kind of interesting in unraveling some of the fundamental questions about MK Ultra, because like you're just sketching out here, you know, here is just a super smart guy who's interested in cutting edge stuff. So the big bad CIA deep state wasn't quite what it is today, and people didn't know, I don't think. So in the 1950s, if you're, you know, in residency or a postdoc, or, you know, these are the most elite guys you could possibly want to partner with. And if they're coming up and tapping you on the shoulder and say, hey, buddy, you are really smart, and, you know, let's just meet, and we want to get to know you. And by the way, we have this unlimited funding for these projects and the kind of stuff that you're interested in. I mean, I just think we have to have that perspective moving forward in order to see the whole picture of this guy as it emerges, because there is that murky stuff and that really dark, sinister stuff. But it does sound to me like there's also a real human being and someone who's just really bright and inquisitive and is trying to advance our understanding of consciousness and who we are. Do you have any thoughts on that and balancing those two?
Of course. That's interesting you say, because it's totally accurate. I mean, this guy was somebody who, I mean, he was brilliant. I mean, there's no question about it. And during that time, he was associating with some of the highest up people in physics, you know, mathematics. I mean, there's some links to Einstein, believe it or not, around that time with Buharich. And I think, you know, like I said before, people associate him with, you know, all this wacky stuff and the UFOs and the Geller and everything else. But when you really look back, I mean, this guy was somebody who really could have had quite an amazing career when it came to medicine, when it came to the mind. And I think, you know, there's an interesting leap in the story here around the time with him in the early 50s when he got involved with the Round Table Foundation, which was up in Maine. That happened right around this time. And I think that's where he really shifted his interest, where his interest really shifted into some of these more far out things.
No, that's great. That's great. I tell you what, again, as I was telling you in before we kind of got on this, it's been a challenge putting this interview together because I want to break it into chunks that people can maybe identify with. And at the same time, wow, I mean, there's just so many places we could go. So, you know, because we've already kind of touched on some of the really crazy, crazy, wacky stuff. What I thought we might do is bring it back. Should we talk? Let me ask you, do you want to talk about psychedelics next? Or do you want to talk about kind of straight up parapsychology, Uri Geller next? Which do you think would be kind of a nice tight story that people could kind of grab a hold of? And then once we decide, then you can kind of set up back to his bio, you know, what time this is in his life and how he got involved.
Yeah. So
where should we go? Uri and SRI, parapsychology, or should we look at the magic mushrooms and the psychedelics?
I think the mushroom psychedelics, because that's a little earlier in the timeline. So that would make more sense, I think.
Great. So let's do that. And I've shared the screen. It's kind of for those of you who are watching the video, I got a picture of the book that Puharich wrote, The Sacred Mushroom. That may sound familiar, but he's the guy who really wrote the first book. And then I have a clip from a rather amazing video that I've shared before on this show, but you got to go see this. It's on YouTube. It's from this, I think, was it 1950s or 60s, sometime in that time frame.
Yeah, early 60s, yeah.
Early 60s, I think it was 1961. There's this TV show, One Step Beyond, an amazing TV show. They wouldn't have this on the air today. And the title of it is The Sacred Mushroom. And there is Puharich being introduced as the kind of expert. He walks out of the jungle and he talks about how they're going to explore and do this on-air experiment with these magic mushrooms. And his angle on them is, his test is, do they increase psychic powers? So the whole show in 1961, broadcast on broadcast TV, is a psi experiment and a rather, you know, tightly, I don't want to say tightly controlled, but for TV, they're doing a straight up psi experiment. So I don't know, let's use that as kind of a launching off point, but help us out here, Greg. Take us back to, you know, how this, what time in his life this is, what's going on with him, and then set up his whole interest and involvement with psychedelics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, first off, if no one's read The Sacred Mushroom, I highly suggest it. It's quite an amazing book. One of the first things that got me interested in him. But yeah, I think this leads back to, you know, the early 50s, we're talking 52, 53, Puharich, he had been working out of a laboratory called the Round Table Foundation. And what that was quite a beautiful, huge estate in Camden, Maine, which is pretty far north up in Maine. And he was doing all sorts of research there, which was actually funded by a lot of the wealthiest families in the country. I mean, we're talking the DuPont family, the Astor family. These are people who, you know, at that time were very interested in, you know, getting involved in what they thought was this cutting edge research. And Puharich, you know, was the guy to go to for this stuff. And they really thought highly of him. They thought he was onto something. And so back then he got very involved in research using mushrooms. And like you said, this was before Wasson. This was before Leary when it comes to LSD, but
how did he even get the inspiration, the inkling? I mean, there's got to be a story there. I don't know if you've uncovered it yet. I mean, why, you know, go to Mexico and look for the mushrooms?
At the time he had been, shortly after he had graduated with his degree from Northwestern, he was actually in the Army. And he was working for the chemical center in the Army for a few years. And some people had caught on to his research that he was interested in, you know, the brain and consciousness. these sorts of things. And they went to him in the early, you know, years of getting interested in these mind-altering substances. So once again, you know, LSD before Leary, and doing all sorts of experiments before the whole boom in the 60s and all that. And they went to Puharich, and I think he had known, he had studied with these kahunas in Hawaii before all this, and I think that got him very interested in mushrooms. He had heard something about them when he was in Hawaii, and I think that's what triggered him to get very interested in these things. So I think he had sort of made a pitch saying, look, I've heard about these mushrooms. They exist somewhere, you know, out in Mexico. They can allegedly do these amazing things. You know, I've got to go find them. And like Wasson, his first trip was actually sponsored by the Army at that time to go down to Mexico. And it's quite an amazing story. I mean, we have footage of this. I mean, he was there with a rather small team. I think a guy with the video camera and maybe two other people, a translator. And, you know, it's just incredible that just to think about, you know, in the early 50s, here's this guy, you know, romping through the jungle, finding these mushrooms. And what he did was he would bring them back to his laboratory in Maine, the Roundtable Foundation. And he would do all sorts of ESP experiments. So, you know, he would test somebody when they were not on mushrooms, and then he would test somebody when they were, you know, dosed on mushrooms. And like you said, his theory was that when you're on these things, it enhances your ability. It enhances your extrasensory perception ability. And, you know, personally, I think there was some really interesting results. I mean, this is in the Sacred Mushroom book, if you read it, and it's a little bit in his book, Beyond Telepathy, which came out around the same time. It's very convincing results. Of course, you know, people have all their different opinions on this kind of stuff, but
well, let me jump in there, because part of the reason that people have a lot of different opinions is because of the way the whole psychedelic thing plays out, right? I mean, so you've already set it up that he has these folks that he's talking to, Army connections, what we call deep state connections to, intelligence connections. But again, as you said before, you know, we got to put this in context. And I would add, we have to put it in a historical context. Mm-hmm. This is right after World War II. You know, we don't know what's up. We know we've dodged a major bullet in terms of controlling the whole world with fascism. And, you know, the CIA, the newly minted CIA, is kind of got a blank check to go and do whatever they have to kind of keep us safe, kind of thing. You got to imagine.
Exactly. And
we find out later that one of the things that they got interested in really early on was, how do we control people? And what if we could control people? And they can always spin it around and say, hey, we're trying to protect you. We don't want other people controlling you. So if someone's going to control you, we better be able to know what it is. So I just put that out there because it's easy to take. I don't want to give Puharich a kind of free pass here by any means. But what interests me is what you just said. This guy doesn't seem to be interested in, at least at this point, he's not looking for the mind control aspect of it. It doesn't seem like he's all that interested in, although I want you to kind of correct me or expound on this, you know, where he is on the spiritual aspect of it and extending beyond these consciousness realms. But his focus, what I found interesting, he's like, darn, let's see how, you know, he's like the doctor scientist. Let's do experiments with this. Does this relate to telepathy? If you take the mushrooms, can you read my mind and I read your mind? And, you know, what is that technology from a biological, medical perspective? Is there something going on in the brain that's, you know, doing this? He wants to know. He's a curious guy. So could you pull that apart for us? You know, both how deep state he is at this point, number one, and then number two, is he looking at it from the spiritual standpoint, from the extended consciousness standpoint? You said he was talking to the big kahunas in Hawaii. Obviously, when you talk to those people, the shamanic people are saying, hey, dude, you can go play around with that stuff, but it ain't about that. Is he that, or is he coming at it from this kind of Western thing where he says, well, you just don't know, you know, you don't know, old man, you know, what it's really about is getting control of it so we can turn it into another medicine. I put a lot on the table there, but.
Oh, it's okay. Yeah, it's interesting. In terms of the deep state, I mean, at that time, there's documentation of this. Once again, it gets murky with his involvement in some of these things in terms of actual proof of what he did, where he was, who he was associated with. There's a few things that show this, but he, at that time, was actually doing sort of a lecture tour, and he was presenting papers about the possible uses of ESP in warfare. And he was giving these lectures at, you know, places like the Pentagon, you know, Army Intelligence, all these sorts of places. And like you said, at that time, they were sort of buying into this stuff. They thought that this could be helpful. And he was the guy to go to for this. So his name started to circulate around these sort of deep state areas. And, you know, it's interesting what you say, because he... You know, I think at first he was doing a lot of research because, you know, that was his job. You know, he was being contracted to do this research with LSD and with mushrooms. But I think, you know, his spiritual sort of side really came in around that time. We're talking mid-50s, early 60s, where I think he started to sort of see what the Army's plan was, to what their plan to do with these substances were, control people, I know, this really dark stuff. And I think for whatever reason, he was just, you know, he was sort of horrified, I think, when he realized what they were really going to do with this stuff. And, you know, with his experience with the kahunas in Hawaii, he was very much, you know, turned off by that. And I think he said, there's so much good we can do with this stuff. Why are we using it for all this really scary research? And so he really flipped. We're talking around the time of the sacred mushroom, 60, 61. He really had a total flip. And he sort of slowly started transitioning away from the research that he was doing, mostly with the Army, some with the Navy, when it came to ESP experiments. You know, we're talking taking mushrooms and seeing if you can send a message to somebody down in a submarine and these sorts of things, which is all documented. It's pretty unbelievable. But yeah, he definitely had sort of this spiritual turn where I think he started to get a little scared of what, you know, he was being asked to do. And he sort of said, there's so much more we can do here. There's so much more we can explore. And so he started to distance himself from the Army stuff, from the deep state stuff. But I think what you see is that sort of followed him around his whole life, unfortunately.
What about the psychedelics thing? So it's the 60s. And what was it like for him as the country? He sees the country go through this kind of psychedelic revolution, and then as we know, there's some real questions as to what's really driving that and whether that's a culture shaping kind of exercise or whether it's a straight up thing. But just take that aside for a minute. You know, here's a guy who was way ahead of the curve, and now, you know, it's 60s, 70s television. It's laughing. It's the culture. It's, you know, the whole hippie thing. It's Woodstock. I mean, that had to be a whole trip for him.
Yeah, certainly. I think he, from what I've gathered, doing a lot of research, especially into his past, I think, like I said before, he just saw there was just so much more potential for these things, you know, and instead of just the whole, you know, peace and love, 60s flower stuff. I mean, I think he was so convinced that there was some sort of secret to be tapped into with this stuff. I mean, his whole theory that taking the mushroom can enhance your extrasensory abilities. And he was just so determined to sort of prove and to sort of show that, you know, there's more to this here. And I think, you know, we see today that we're still doing research with you know, the mushroom and microdosing to help depression and PTSD and these things. But back then, he was onto this. I mean, even in the sacred mushroom, I mean, he's talking about basically microdose. I mean, he's talking about what, you know, these foundations now who are doing psilocybin research. I mean, he was, that was in the sacred mushroom in 1953. I mean, that can help depression, it can help anxiety. I mean, it's quite remarkable. So I think he was very caught up in all of that. And I think he was desperately trying to show to people, you know, through the books he was writing, through these TV shows, like One Step Beyond, that there's more to this stuff, you know?
Great. I tell you what, let's switch gears for a minute. And I want to talk about Uri Geller, because that's going to be another touchstone that I think people can, you know, glom onto. And there's some really interesting connections there too. One is that Uri Geller, of course, is the very famous Israeli-born psychic / entertainer / mentalist who a lot of people will know or think, oh yeah, he's the guy who was debunked on Johnny Carson. And I got a picture there on the screen of, oh, you know, he was debunked and stuff like that. And then that gets into the whole skeptical thing and stuff like that. But there's a much, much deeper story. We actually explored this on Skeptico not too long ago. I had an interview with Jacques Vallée. And lo and behold, Jacques Vallée tells this amazing story of being at the SRI lunch table, and Uri says, "Hey, Jacques, I want to do an experiment with you." And they do this telepathy experiment right there that Vallée says is like completely proof positive that there's something real going on. But beyond that, there's all these other cases where people have said Uri Geller was for real. Uri Geller, of course, he was at Stanford Research Institute and he was tested under the tightest conditions. It doesn't take much to test whether someone can, you know, draw a picture that's inside of a manila envelope. I mean, the controls there are like high school level controls, and you got some pretty smart, top-notch people at SRI. So I say all that as a background. So if people don't know Uri Geller or just have this basic understanding of, oh, Uri Geller was a show magician or is a show magician, a show mentalist, it's much, much deeper than that. And then there's also the whole deep state angle, because once someone is known to have those powers, a lot of other people are going to be interested in him too. And of course, those people include the CIA, they include Mossad, Israeli intelligence. So there's that whole thing. But we're talking about Andrea Puharich, and lo and behold, he's the guy who brings Uri Geller to the U.S. How does that happen? I mean, what's the whole story there?
It's quite fascinating. He... as you said, Uri is from Israel, and you know, we did a pretty extraordinary interview with Uri for this film. He's a really, really remarkable guy, no matter what you think about him. But you know, the story goes is I think it was around 1970, and you know, Puharich was as we've seen and as we've heard and as I've found to be accurate as was doing some contracting work for the CIA. And you know, at that time they were very interested in you know, the paranormal stuff, ESP, even, you know, using magicians, you know, to trick people into things. And the story goes, you know, Puharich was sent over to Israel by the CIA because somebody there had heard about this guy Geller. They said, you know, we've been to some shows. He's this sort of illusionist. He allegedly does these pretty tricks. He can read minds. He can, you know, bend these spoons. He can do all these sorts of things. And people there are pretty convinced that this is real. And they said, you know, they told Puharich, go check this guy out. And so he did. He went over there. He went to one of Geller's shows. And, you know, this is where it gets a little strange, because, you know, we don't know what Puharich, what kind of mindset he was in at the time, what his real intentions were, but Horich was convinced, as he writes in his book and as he, you know, says over and over again, that he thought Geller was the real deal. I mean, he took him to a test facility after one of these shows, these magician shows that Geller did, and, you know, they set up a little lab and did all these tests with him, which there's some footage of, and, you know, doing things like moving the hands of a clock, stuff like that, these little mini experiments that Buharich sort of documented. And
let me just interject, because if you look at all, you'll see that there's dozens of people who had the exact same experience. They met the guy, they had a little bit of a scientific background. They said, okay, test it. And he'd go, okay, and he'd put his hand over your watch and your watch would stop. Or, you know, you could take out your keys, forget the spoons, take out your keys, and you'd hold them and bend them. So, I mean, I don't think it'd take too many of those experiences right in front of your eyes where you'd say, something's going on here that I need to look into a little bit further. So there's a lot of people that had the same experience, right?
Yeah. And I think, you know, something I always find really fascinating about this whole Geller-Buharich relationship, and it gets really strange very, very quickly, as I'm sure a lot of people know. But, you know, we've got to look at Buharich as a guy who, I mean, this guy, he clearly was a very bright individual, you know, and a lot of people, they often say, you know, well, Geller was tricking people, it was a sleight of hand thing. But, you know, to me, it always seemed like Buharich wasn't the kind of guy who would fall for something like that. You know what I'm saying? And I feel like it's too easy to just say, oh, you know, he was tricked, and
it's ridiculous, really.
Yes. So I always looked at it as Buharich, you know, he didn't seem like the type of guy who would fall for this kind of stuff. So that's where it gets really juicy, because we're saying, you know, what really happened that got this guy who's, you know, a medical doctor, whatever you want to say about him, you know, he wouldn't just fall for this stuff. So that's where it gets really juicy. But, you know, what happened basically was he was convinced that Geller could do these things. And so he, you know, set up a research program. He set up a research program through his friend Edgar Mitchell, who I'm sure, you know, a lot of people know about who listen to the show. But, you know, Buharich is working closely with Edgar Mitchell at the time. And Mitchell was able to get some funding to set up this research program with Geller. So Geller came to the States with Buharich. They set him up. At first, it wasn't SRI. They went and did a couple quick tours to some universities, and then they got set up at SRI, and, you know, the whole story with Putoff and Targ, and they started to do these experiments with Geller. And that's, you know, where this whole crazy thing with him happens. You know, they've got that footage, the documentation of the stuff Geller was doing with them. And, you know, it's once again, you know, I keep saying it, but a lot of this stuff, it gets murky. You know, there's this, what I've found doing this project is there's sort of the surface level story that, you know, anybody can Google and you can read. And then, you know, there's a lot of stuff that you start to hear. I mean, especially for me, when I start interviewing people and talking to different people below the surface, you know, people who were there who you might not have heard of or read about online. And that's when these stories start to come out, where you really start to question, you know, what was really going on here? What were the intentions here?
Tell us more what you're thinking when you say that, Greg.
Well, I think, for people who don't know, Andre actually wrote a book. I see you have the picture up there, called Uri. And, you know, it's a very strange book. I don't know if anyone's read it. I suggest reading it, just whether you're interested in this stuff or not, because it's quite an extraordinary book. But in the early 70s, you know, while this sort of SRI stuff was going on, Buharich, he wrote this book on Uri. And, you know, he puts out this message in the book, basically, and this is, you know, we can get into the nine after this,
right,
if you'd like. But basically, Buharich wrote this book, and the book puts out this message that Geller is able to do the things that he does because he's getting some sort of power from extraterrestrials. And the book is just so far out; it's like you're reading an amazing science fiction book.
This is what Geller has said, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
This is the crazy thing, again, that, you know, on this show, Skeptico, I mean, you say you've listened for a while. I mean, I started out really on a pretty straightforward path of looking at this consciousness stuff. And I'm telling you, no matter where you start, you wind up with all this weirdness that's just unavoidable. So, you know, try and take our story right now and try and take Puharich and try and stay between the little white lines. It's impossible to do, you know. You're going to wind up talking about all this wacky stuff. And so we're going to talk in a minute about, I want to stay, finish talking about Uri Geller and about his work at SRI. And this, again, straight up parapsychology work that's being done. This is the basis of parapsychology. And really the foundation of it is this work that's done at Stanford Research Institute. But in a minute, we're going to say, screw all that. It's just such piddly crap compared to where these guys are going. Because you have somebody like Uri Geller, and he's saying, great, you know, you think it's cool that I can bend these spoons. And wow, but let me tell you, it's really all about the aliens and yeah. the ETs and the other connection. And then lo and behold, you know, as you're going to tell us in a minute when we start talking about the nine, and maybe we're ready to start talking about that now. I mean, this is where Andrea starts to go, and it's he doesn't go there. He's taken there. I mean, whether like so many of these experiences that people have, you know, it's not where you want to go. It's where the experience wants to take you. So maybe you can lead us into talking about the nine.
Of course. Yeah, I think, you know, with Geller, you know, like I said before, with the surface level stuff, I mean, a lot of people know about the SRI experiments, and it's easy to look up, you know, the video and the documentation. But, you know, there is sort of this whole story going on behind the curtains, in a sense, with Puharich and Geller, especially with Puharich's book. And, you know, that book basically sort of threw Puharich so far out there, you know, he sort of lost credibility with all the, you know, real scientific people, the academic people he would associate with, and people thought he was nuts. I mean, that was really the turning point where they said, this guy's, you know, this is totally far out. And Geller even, you know, tried to distance himself from Puharich after that book came out. It's really just a story a lot of people don't know about when it comes to Geller, when it comes to their relationship. I mean, and the crazy thing is that book was a bestseller. I mean, it was published by Doubleday, which
I didn't know that.
Which today is the, one of the biggest publishing houses. It was a bestseller, and so you really got to think. It always comes back to, you know, what was Puharich's intentions here with this book?
Well, you know what? I think we got to jump in then and talk about the nine. And then you can help us understand the timeline and how it fits into Puharich's life, because, you know, I have a feeling, I didn't think of this before, but this must have been going on for him in a way that, you know, caused him to think differently. And eventually, I guess he just probably had to share that and get that out. So what do you think about... let me rephrase that. Tell us about the nine. Tell us, you know, what is the nine, who it was. Tell us about this amazing seance he had. Who was there? What happened? And who was there is like a big part of this. This is like unbelievable heavy hitters.
The history of the nine, it's goes back to, once again, the Roundtable Foundation, which was a research laboratory that Puharich had up in Maine in the early 50s. And the quick story is a lot of people would visit the Roundtable Foundation, you know, all sorts of people, psychics, mediums, and everything. And when, thank you. I just got delivered a coffee. Sorry. So people would visit all the time, you know, pretty strange people. Puharich would sort of evaluate them, study them, you know, are these people the real deal? Are they a little, you know, iffy? And so one day, this Indian fellow came into the Roundtable Foundation, a guy by the name of Vinod, Dr. Vinod. And, you know, he was allegedly a medium, and him and Buharic hit it off. And so this one night, which, you know, there's documentation of, there's tape recordings of and everything, you know, this guy Vinod allegedly goes into this trance and he starts to channel what he's calling is this entity, the Nine. And so he goes into this trance, he starts sort of spewing out all this really far out information. He starts, you know, telling Buharic things about his personal life that was really shocking. And so that really affected Buharic. I mean, he at that time, he was really just tipping over into the spiritual side of stuff. And I think he was really interested in this guy Vinod and this thing, the Nine, that he was allegedly channeling. And so, you know, they recorded it. And shortly after that, Buharic, you know, went off and did the mushroom stuff. So the Nine was sort of this thing that happened. He was very interested in it, but I think he sort of left it there and didn't go back to it for a long time.
So, okay, so let me just interject here because I just had it up on the screen. I don't want to blow past this too quickly. So the Nine, and I'm going to go ahead and read this off of the screen for folks, and then we can talk a little bit more about it. But in real kind of simple terms, on December 31st, 1952, through an Indian teacher who was visiting the U.S., Buharic made contact with the Nine. That is nine ascended beings, supposedly, spiritual beings, a group of high beings who've had a long and direct involvement with humanity's evolution. Okay, this is the kind of new, we all know, immediately we recognize this as the kind of new age-ish, kind of crazy channeling stuff that everybody channels.
Yeah.
But this gets really, really weird in terms of the information that they're able to bring back, the verification of it over the years. And this becomes something that stays with Buharic for 20, 30, 40 years, right? I mean, maybe take us through the timeline, because he also gets involved with this. It works at this initial seance that he has that is very CIA connected. And then that, after a couple of years, that stops. But then he finds this other medium years later in Florida, and he starts it up again with some more crazy folks, including Bob Denver, you know, one of the most famous entertainers of the time, and some other really, really noteworthy people. So there's a huge story to tell here. We can't tell it all, but again, that's why Greg is making this film, and that's why he needs your help in making this film, because you can tell this is a really important story to get out there. Fill in some of the pieces I'm missing about this long-standing experience he has with these ascended beings who have a direct involvement with humanity's evolution. I mean, you can't get bigger than that, right?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I think, you know, like I said, his first interaction, like you just read, was through this guy Vinod, and it really affected him. Buharic, I think this is when he first really got interested in the channeling stuff in a big way. And so you're right that the Nine was this thing that really was a part of his life until he died in the 90s. And so if you cut from the 50s with this Indian fellow Veen, early 70s, if you read Andrea's book on Uri, he references the Nine. And, you know, allegedly through certain mediums, Buharic is able to communicate with them. I mean, do we know the accuracy of that? Of course, we don't know. But, you know, even through Geller, if you read his book, you can see that Andrea was communicating with the Nine through Geller, through these tape recordings. You know, a tape machine would magically start recording out of nowhere, and they would listen back to the tape, and it would be, you know, the Nine, things like this. It's totally far out. And, you know, if you cut to the mid 70s, 74, 75, like you said, he is meeting a woman named Phyllis Schlemmer, and pretty which is based in Florida. And I think, you know, a lot of people at this time, you know, Buharich became this sort of big figure in the parapsychology world. And, you know, he was very thought after. People would travel all from all over the world to come visit him and talk to him and work with him.
We had a little bit of a gap there, but I think we can pick up right exactly where we left off. We're talking about the nine and this amazing session, that series of long-term, decade-longs seances, channeling sessions that he's having with extraterrestrial beings. I don't know. That's what's reported. And I think where we left off in the story was with this woman. So tell us about Phyllis and how she fits into the timeline.
Sure. I think like right before we left off here, you know, I said people were attracted to Andrea, like, you know, mediums, these all types, channels, and alleged psychics, and that they would come from all over just to meet him. They wanted to, you know, be evaluated by him, you know, because he was the parapsychology guy who was the real deal. And so I think, you know, Phyllis was one of these people who I think, you know, sort of tracked down Andrea. This was in the mid-70s, around 74, 75. And, okay, yeah, so Phyllis was, Phyllis Schlemmer was a medium who got into contact with Buharich in the mid-70s. And like Geller and Buharich's relationship, Buharich, you know, for whatever reason, was convinced that Phyllis Schlemmer was the real deal. She was a great medium. She could apparently go into these trances. And, you know, what I've always found interesting about the channeling stuff is, you know, and I've never seen this firsthand, but, you know, apparently these people sort of completely leave their body, you know, and they let this entity, whether it's the nine or whatever it is, sort of totally take them over. And when they snap out of it, you know, they don't remember a thing about what happened, about what they said. And so apparently that would happen with Phyllis Schlemmer all the time. So the story goes, you know, whether you want to believe this to be the truth or not, you know, Phyllis, you know, had fallen into a trance, and who pops up is the nine. Starts, you know, coming through her. And so this starts Buharich all over again on the nine. You know, he apparently had come into contact with them through the Indian medium in the 50s, and now we cut to the early 70s, mid-70s, he's hearing from them again through a totally separate medium, Phyllis Schlemmer. So this starts him off on his whole journey with Phyllis. At that time, they were also working with a guy named John Whitmore, who at one time was a very famous race car driver, a guy from the UK. He was interested in what Buharich was doing. He joined up with him. And so, you know, Buharich, John Whitmore, and Phyllis Schlemmer, you know, they traveled all over the globe, you know, allegedly being told by the nine, they need to go here, they need to go there, they need to meditate for world peace. And it's just such a crazy story. I mean, there's photos, there's videos, but it really just raises the question, you know, what would really cause them to do this, to really, you know, travel all over the globe, be allegedly being told to do so by this entity. I mean, it's very,
well, it's crazy that we call it a crazy story. I mean, I think we have to consider that, you know, in the brief break that we had, I called you on the phone and we talked for a minute. I'm real glad I'm able to introduce this, you know. I had the opportunity not too long ago, I've interviewed him a couple times, but I interviewed Dr. Jeffrey Mishlov on Skeptico, and people know him from his long-running PBS show, Thinking Aloud, and now New Thinking Aloud, and he has hundreds of videos with a lot of the leading lights, if you will, in parapsychology and now into spirituality. The guy is a Cal Berkeley PhD. Pretty much plays it close to the vest in terms of a scientist. He is a scientist in every respect. I got the PhD. He also has these connections to Stanford Research Institute. Again, a part of it is because he was up there. He was at Berkeley. But I got to introduce this story to the mix because I think it's completely, completely relevant. But Mishlov is a guy who is interested in parapsychology, and he's there with Stanford Research. He goes to their doorstep and he starts hanging around, and Hal Puthoff and Russell Targ say, "Hey, you're interested in this stuff. Let me throw something at you. We got this guy who we can't seem to get rid of. His name is Ted Owens. You can see him here." And Ted Owens is this guy who is talking to us about these crazy experiences he's having with aliens. And aliens are visiting him, and they're sending him all these messages. And you know what? And they're trying to slough him off. You know, like, we don't have enough crazy stuff going on. We need a guy who's talking to aliens. We're trying to just get Uri Geller and set up some parapsychology experiments, because this stuff is all starting to come together, right? So Mishloff goes off and he starts working with Ted Owens. And the reason I bring all this up is it's the exact same story, only he's got even more interesting stuff going on, where Ted Owens is making the weather change. And then there's documentation that the weather changes. He's making the UFOs show up. And they show up right where they're supposed to. And when you talk to Mishloff, he's like, I don't get it. He wrote this book, The PK Man. Anyone can go read it. And he documents these years that he spent with Ted Owens, same kind of thing, tracking him around the world, saying, "Hey, come on over here. They got this for us. They're going to give us this message. Here's this message." And I just wonder, at what point do we have to step back and say, okay, rather than all the caveats and qualifications and the need we have for people not to think we're totally crazy, what if we just take it as straight up, that's what's happening? So there's these extraterrestrials, and somehow they've managed, they have a technology that allows them to access this realm that we reach in mediumship or in deep meditation or in psychedelics. And they're in that realm, and they're coming through, and they're sending those messages. Take that, if you will, and fit that back into Puharich's story. I mean, what does he say about that? If we took it that way, what does he say is the whole purpose and meaning of the Nine? What should we be doing based on what he found out from the Nine?
Oh yeah, it's so fascinating that the Mishloff story, you can compare it almost right back to Puharich, because once again, if you read the book Uri, written by Andre Puharich, it's the same thing. They were getting these messages through the Nine, telling them to go do certain things, and you know, it's all documented. It's, you know, obviously you can believe it or not believe it, but you know, I was thinking a lot about this recently. I was reading an article, and it, you know, this whole idea that, like you said, maybe if you're in a deep trance or through a medium, that might be some way that, you know, it is possible to communicate with, you know, said entities. But, you know, a lot of the Nine's message, which I am also very interested in how this works, is, you know, the medium, like I said before, completely falls out of their body, and when they come to, they have no memory of what they said, but it's all on tape, and they're saying this very intricate, you know, very articulate stuff. I mean, physics, science, mathematics, all this kind of stuff, who, especially in the case of Phyllis Schlemmer, would, you know, otherwise, you know, not be able to discuss or talk about.
Just sitting right, this in woman state. In South Florida who's just hanging out, giving readings.
Yeah. So that's what really intrigued me about, I mean, of course, the story, but even just in a general sense about, you know, channels and mediums, you know, there's a couple instances where this is the case, where these people would otherwise not be, you know, intellectually trained enough to even discuss this stuff. But, you know, the Nine's message was very much, you know, trying to save the planet. I mean, there's a book called The Only Planet of Choice that was written by Schlemmer, which was basically mostly transcripts from the recording sessions that she did with Puharich when she was in trance. And a lot of it is, you know, it's the typical sort of channeled stuff, but we need to remember back then it was the first time this was happening. Now, you know, we see these channels and it's all the same stuff, very new age kind of content. But back then, you know, it was about, you know, mostly world peace, you know, saving the planet, saving humanity, sort of raising the consciousness level of humanity, trying to get people to just think differently about all these things. And, you know, as we see with Buharic, that message really stuck with him. And like I said, until the early 90s, he was still talking about the nine. He was still writing about the nine. I mean, it had a very sort of deep impact on him, I think. And it's just, it's fascinating. Like I said, if you just really Google, you can go down a rabbit hole of this stuff with the Buharic and the nine. I mean, it gets very conspiracy heavy at times, but.
Which it has to, it just has to, we shouldn't apologize for that because it's real.
No.
Conspiracy stuff is real, as we've outlined through all this talk. I mean, he is working with intelligence agencies and he is working with people who are deep, deep state. Does he ever, later in his life, have any ideas on how he resolves these two worlds, his two worlds? I mean, the one world of, you know, there are enemies over there. Those are the bad guys. And we got to defeat the Russians or we got to defeat whoever it is, you know, whatever was the stated agenda for all those operations, as horrible as they were, you know, MK Ultra or any of the rest of that, as horrible as they were, there was a stated agenda that we bought into and we still buy into and we still wrap the flag around us and say, yeah, but at least we're better than them. And yet, as you're alluding to, the message of the nine, the message of Mishlov's aliens, of over and over again, everyone who enters this other realm is, you got it all wrong. That just isn't work. That just doesn't work. Hmm. How did Buharic wrestle with those two realities? Because that's the other thing, I think, you know, we can't deny either of those realities. Do you have any sense, as kind of a bringing it all together, Greg, how he resolved those for himself as he reached the end of his life?
Yeah, I think, you know, at the end of Andrew's life, as I've seen through some video footage and other recordings of him, we're talking late 80s into the early 90s, it was evident he sort of became quite bitter. I think, you know, he sort of had this entire life of trying to push these messages to people, you know, what if this is real? Let's not immediately debunk this. Let's not immediately throw this out the window. Let's sit and talk about it. And, you know, after a lifetime of pushing that, I think, you know, people were still skeptical. People were still debunking. And I think he became very bitter about that. There's a particular interview that I have of him, and I think in 93, and he's really just going off about this stuff. I think he's very angry that, you know, his life's work didn't reach more people. And, you know, he was bitter that, you know, these things he spent his whole life on didn't, you know, get as far as he would have wished. And I think, you know, it really raises an interesting question. And I think that's what's so great about doing a film on him, is it's really hard to pin down, you know, what his real intentions were. I mean, if you look at the nine, and like you said, these people who were involved in it, these very, very wealthy families, these CIA types, I mean, you know, you've got to ask why were they there? Why were they a part of this? Were they simply just intrigued by it? Did they have some sort of different agenda? It's really, really deep when you start asking these questions. But I think, you know, Buharic, he really was a spiritual person. You know, the bitterness at the end of his life aside, he was very spiritual. I found out through his son Andy, who I've worked a lot with on the film, and his other siblings, that, you know, he would take trips to Israel and to all these places around the world. He was very interested in religions, and he was just, you know, one of these guys who just was so open-minded to all these things. And I think at the end of the day, you know, he really just put this all out on the table, and he just said, this is my experience. This is what happened to me throughout my life. Here's the Uri book. Here's the nine, you know, to take it or leave it. That was really his attitude at the end of the day, I think, about all this kind of stuff. And that's why I think a film could be quite important, because as we've discussed, I mean, he did so many amazing things. You can't just look at this guy and just say, oh, he was nuts. Let's move on here. He really did some important things.
Absolutely. So then tell us more about the film project, how people can get involved, how people can support it, the basics of, have you decided how much money you need to raise as part of the Kickstarter campaign? When will the film be out? How long? Where will it be distributed? Anything like that that people might want to know before they kind of become involved?
Yeah, well, I've been working on this for quite some time. But basically, in order to have the creative control that I think is important for a film like this, we're trying to finish it ourselves. So we're doing a Kickstarter for the film. And if you go to www.puharichfilm.com, there will be a link to that Kickstarter page. And, you know, it's very important, I think, not just for the film, but, you know, a lot of the archives that I've been, you know, privileged enough to be given. I mean, this is stuff that is very important and should be preserved. So a lot of the money that we'll raise will go to, you know, getting this stuff digitized. I mean, Puharich left behind several hundred slide photographs dating back to the 40s that have never been seen, never been scanned or digitized. So, you know, the money will go to that sort of stuff. We've also been talking with Northwestern University, where, as I mentioned, Puharich has a medical degree from, and they've sort of recognized the legacy of Puharich, and they're interested in sort of setting up some material in their library, in the special collections section of their library. So, you know, we'll put some stuff there. But yeah, we'll have the Kickstarter page going. You know, if anyone's interested in the world of parapsychology or consciousness or anything, this is obviously an important project. And we're not looking for too much, but, you know, you'll find all the information on the Kickstarter page. And
great, great. Well, we will definitely have it linked up and we'll stay on top of this project. Once it gets going, maybe you can come back on after the film takes shape, and certainly as it's being released, we'll have you back on and follow up on this story.
Yeah.
Greg, it's been great having you on. Thanks again so much for joining me on Skeptico, and best of luck with this really important work.
Thanks, Alex. Appreciate it.
Thanks again to Greg Malazzi for joining me today on Skeptico. Boy, there are so many questions to tee up from this interview. I can hardly contain myself to one. First, we have the whole question of Puharich and who he really was. Was he this deep state? Was he this tool of the deep state, or just an honest scientist trying to do good work? What about the whole thing with Uri Geller? How does that add to our understanding of the equation? How does that add to our understanding of the history of psi, the history of parapsychology? And then, of course, we have the nine, this seance this ongoing seance for 20, 30 years that brings the most important, most central questions to the fore about aliens trying to help us save the planet. Again, there's a lot to cover here. Those are just three of the questions we could tee up. I'm sure there's many more, and I hope you will dive in and tell me your thoughts and let other people know your thoughts about this, about these questions. Of course, the place to do it is through the Skeptico website or on Facebook, on Twitter, or the Skeptico forum. We're getting a few more people over there. It's getting to be more fun again. I love the in-depth conversations that you can have on a forum that you can't have other places. I don't know, maybe I'm old school. I just don't see the other conversations I have with people getting quite as deep and intense and interesting as the ones in the forum. So I don't know if I'm just missing the boat on some other technology that's out there, but, you know, Twitter posts don't go very deep, and same with Facebook comments. It's like drive by, hit and run. And I always like to dive deep. I want to know what people think. I want to know how people support the positions they have. I love when people bring something new to the table and say, hey, well, I watched this video and it said this, or I did this research. I just read this research paper and it contradicts this. That's the kind of stuff I like, not just some drive-by opinion, but hey, that's just me. But hey, that's just me. At any rate, that's my pitch for joining me over in the forum. Of course, the main thing is just that you enjoy and listen to the show and you find it useful and you share it with other people. So if you're doing that, you're good with me. You're good with me anyway, but what the heck. I have a lot more Skeptico coming up in the near future. Some good shows, a lot of stuff. Can't get to it all. Trying to slow it down a little bit so that I don't become overwhelmed and lose my zeal for digging into all this stuff. But that's just my personal. But those are my personal problems. You don't need to know about those. Anyways, stay with me for all that's coming up. Until next time, take care. Bye for now.